Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop,
we've seen the second season of Queer Eye, and we are bringing you our exclusive review.
Plus, a special big sale. We're going to suggest some of our favorite queer pop culture that you need to check out.
Right now on Inside Pop. Hey, y'all. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson. And this is Inside Pop. We are your weekly dive inside the world of pop culture. This week, we're covered in rainbow flags.
Every single color of the rainbow is represented because it's Pride Month. For those of you who are actually under a rock, Pride Month is the month of June where we celebrate, embrace, and just have so much fun bringing LGBTQIA culture to the masses, to give it props.
Give it props.
You know what I'm
there
saying?
There were gay pilgrims. There were gay... Okay, let me calm down. yeah, I mean, it's kind of like Black History Month. I mean, every black person jokes about it. I think many people do. Why do we get the shortest month? Why do we only have 28 days to celebrate? Listen, the gays aren't that much better. They got a 30-day month, but we're going to pack as much as possible in this 30-day month. And yeah, so we've got a little themed episode. It's all about gay pop culture, and don't be scared if you're not gay. We hope that you're either gay or an ally, the way Amita's an amazing ally to the gay community.
Thank you. I am. It's more, again, it's about that accepting of all people. And respecting everyone's beliefs and choices and embracing them, right? And being able to educate and learn about our differences, but also realize that we are all the same. We're all human, right?
Oh my God, you're preaching the way you did last week. Preach it, woman, sister,
yeah, I don't
girl.
Know. I think also to just segue into what we're going to talk about, there is so much of those themes in the huge hit on Netflix, Queer Eye. That is something that is central to the show that everybody fell in love with this winter when season one came out. The Fab Five stars, Tan France, Jonathan Van Ness, Bobby Burke, Karamo Brown, and Anthony Porowski, stole everyone's hearts and really touched people, I think, across the board.
One of the amazing things about Queer Eye to me is that it has mass appeal, but it doesn't seem like it's pandering, right? Like, I feel like, and I don't want to take anything away from the original iteration because that was groundbreaking in many ways, but there's so much more nuance in the second iteration. I feel like the people, the producers who made this new version of Queer Eye were either consciously making it for gay people and straight people, or they didn't think about who they were making it for and they were just going to tell amazing stories. I'm not sure which way they went. Maybe they kind of ping-ponged and thought about both of those things, but I feel like there's... You know, like, I think a straight person could watch the second season of Queer Eye, and we'll get into the specifics of the couple of episodes we're going to talk about, and, you know, like, learn stuff and understand things. And, oh, I wonder if that's what my gay nephew goes through, or I wonder if that's what my, you know, gay neighbor goes through, right? Like, it's very educational in a way, but at the same time, it's also very specific. Like, as a gay man, I watch Queer Eye, and I'm like, oh, wow, they're actually talking about how black gay men and white gay men have very different experiences many times. Like, that's surprisingly nuanced and specific and wonderful. So that's something I think that's also pretty special about this season of the show.
Yeah, I think to continue what you're saying, I think the first version of the show, which is, I think, 15 years ago, it was a straight makeover show. We got a guy, these five, you know, really fine-tuned experts in each of their fields went in and tried to fix their lives in each of those facets. And that worked really well, because who doesn't love a really good, you know, makeover head to toe, and, you know, even in their homes and everything. So that's how that worked. But what I felt was missing from that show that I felt was really done well in season one, and when we get to talk about season two as well as in season two, is you really get to know these five guys. You get to know them much more personally. You get to learn about their journeys, and you know, they drop little pieces of themselves, which in turn helps with the connection. It helps with the connection with the people that they're making over, but then it helps the connection with the audience, right? In to just jump into season two, we have an episode that features somebody who is trans, and one of the Fab Five, Tan France, it was very honest, and he's like, I've actually never met a trans person. I don't know a lot. I want to find out more. I don't know what pronouns to use. What am I supposed to say? And, like, you know, I think there might be some type of automatic, you know, assumption that, well, if you're gay, you know somebody trans. And if you're, you know all of the terms, and you've met somebody in all of these different, these categories. And Tan was somebody who had never met somebody trans. And I think that breaks a little bit of that assumption. And then also educates us, because I'm sure some people watching also didn't and may not have met somebody trans and may not know those things.
Yeah, and also that I think in 2018... mainstream America, the majority of America, are probably a little bit more knowledgeable about trans women than trans men. And this episode, this really special episode of Queer Eye, deals with someone who's transitioned from the kind of gender assigned female to male. And yeah, I mean, it's something that you can't imagine them doing 15 years ago, but it's something that they, I think they do really well this year in 2018. The other episode that we are going to talk a little bit about is also a special episode. They actually, the Fab Five go to help a makeover, a straight woman. She is part of the church. She has a gay son who she accepts, but the gay son doesn't really like coming back home and doesn't really like going back to their church for fear of the church's lack of acceptance. And again, it's really interesting. I almost think this is unprecedented that the hosts bear so much of themselves.
Yes.
And one of the Fab Five talks about, like, he doesn't even go into the church in the first act because he had promised himself he would never go into the church again because of how the church, his church, and the church in general, he feels mistreats gays. And I think that's, I mean, yeah, it was very interesting. Like, can you imagine, you know, like Tim Gunn would never open up like that during Project Runaway, or, yeah, you know, even, you know, the, what's that show where they, I mean, like all of, like, these makeover shows. So I think that's also very special. They really well cast. They got, they cast five men who have interesting stories and lives and who are willing to open up, which is pretty interesting.
Oh, definitely. That moment with Bobby, who, you know, just wouldn't step into the church, you know, and is very early on in the episode where, you know, the Fab Five were just getting to know this, you know, where they were going to help, you know, the church and the event that they were going to help out with. And he wouldn't do it. And I just, oh, my heart broke. And then he opened up a little bit more later. And it was just like, this is what's different. This is what really, I think, makes this show different. And I think is what people are gravitating to, because you're getting to know these hosts personally. And in turn, they're getting to know their subjects personally. And all of that personal connection is really powerful, but I think also really necessary right now. And again, I know I'm in this whole place of acceptance, and everybody, we need to support each other and, you know, live our purpose and all those things. But I think that's why this show has really hit a chord with the entire country and the world, you know, like this show is Netflix is worldwide. And I know that they have press tours and they're going around the world to promoting the show. And I think that's great. If there's something positive out there that can really entertain, but also, you know, educate and really make somebody feel good in the times that we're living right now, I welcome it. I welcome it so much.
Yeah, I think it was really smart of the show to film in the South, right? Because it was very easy. It's much, I would say, easier to find diversity and to find acceptance in New York City or LA or Atlanta. Yes. But the fact that they actually kind of go into rural suburban areas in the South, I think that kind of, you know, it puts everyone to the test. And it also shows it's like, yep, there are some blue people in red states. And guess what? There are some red people in red states who are still willing to interact with gay people. Listen, they not everyone the Fab Five makes over may not vote for gay marriage, actually. I mean, it's like very interesting. It's like, you always hear that the first step is, you know, like, okay, if you know someone who's gay, you know, that helps you empathize a little bit. But it doesn't mean that you're going to vote for gay rights or support a candidate who votes for gay rights. But at least it's that first step, which is important. So, I mean, that would be interesting if there's ever an episode where there's some type of election going on. But yeah, I mean, the personal is political. And I think that you do. It's exactly what you said. I mean, I agree with you. You want to kind of portray that diversity and that acceptance, and hopefully that leads in some way to more of that, which is what the world needs now more than ever.
You know, we mentioned this a few weeks ago. I had the privilege of going to a talk at Vulture Festival here in New York City, and it was Jonathan Van Ness. He was interviewing Justin Theroux as part of his talk at Vulture Festival, and it was a really entertaining and fun conversation. Tan and Anthony from Queer Eye also arrived and sat and watched the talk, but then they came on stage at the end and you know, they had like a little Q&A with everybody on stage, and people in the audience asked questions. And there's this one woman who just said, you know, I have no question. I just need to say thank you. And she started crying and everybody started crying. And you know, Jonathan and Tan and Anthony and I think Justin Theroux all started crying. They, you know, they realize that they also have struck a chord, and you know, and this woman was just so grateful that this show had heart and so grateful to see positive stories. And I loved it. I love that moment. I love that affirmation that they got, because I hopefully it means that they're going to just continue to do this and continue to do some great things. We obviously need to give a shout out to our good friend, James Barker, who also worked on season 2. He actually had a hand in the 2 episodes that we just discussed, which makes me even more proud of how they turned out, because they definitely made me shed a tear. Thanks, James, and the entire team at Scout and Netflix and ITV who put these shows together. It takes a village, and that village is working really hard, and I think they're doing a really good thing. I really do.
Yeah, I want to have James back on, or I'll just text him, because I have you know, definitely some questions. Maybe we can do that. Maybe we can do an end of season wrap up. Hopefully, we can do a "How does it feel to be an Emmy nominee?" Conversation with James, because I'd love that. Queer Eye gets an Emmy nomination, because the one thing that I had thought about Queer Eye, and we're talking about the acceptance and introducing gay people to mainstream society. One thing that I thought was really interesting in the trans episode, it's not really a spoiler, but you see at the end of the episode, this person who's just had their top surgery, meaning breasts removed and kind of a masculine physique, continuing to form. And the last scene, she takes her off her shirt and she's dancing kind of suggestively. And that was interesting to me because, like, it's also that thing of, like, okay, gay people can be gay, but, like, don't show the sex part of them being gay. Like, that's, like, too far. Like, Will and Grace, like, how often did you see Will or Jack actually being sexual creatures as opposed to just, you know, yeah, gay, but nothing's happening uh-huh. below the belt. So I think that's interesting. That was interesting to me as well, that maybe it's because it's Netflix and because it's 2018, but it's like, oh yeah, guess what? You've cared about this person. You've seen the struggle. You've seen the joy. And guess what? She's also a sexual being, and deal with that, right? Like, that's not being hidden completely. Maybe partially, but not completely.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think that was I was definitely taken a little aback when that happened. I was like, oh, wow. You know, he became extremely comfortable extremely fast from the trajectory of the beginning of the episode to the end. But at the same time, I was like, yes, let's see this, you know, because we don't. And I think, again, it goes into the vein of the show. You know, they're really trying to really push hard and but also with compassion. And I love it. I love that they did that.
So this is essentially pop culture of a gay nature that you're recommending to our viewers, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, we've already recommended it in our previous episode about season one. You know, I'm the biggest fan of the series, partially because my very good friend worked on it, but also because of the message and hopefully the collectiveness that comes from it. You know, I think what's great is that so many people have been able to get access to this because it's on Netflix, and so many people have been able to come together saying, oh my God, I've seen it. And then they tell somebody else to see it. You know, that's, you know, as us as producers in TV, that's what would be amazing to have on anything that we work on, right? It is a very big suggestion.
Well, if the listeners have enjoyed this suggestion, they should definitely stay tuned. Because after these messages, we're going to have a special big sell where it's going to be like a big sell bonanza of lots of queer, focused, inspired, centric programming, pop culture for your listening pleasure.
Friendly Fire is a war movie podcast, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't listen to it.
Boy, I'll say, you know, a lot of people, Ben and Adam, might not initially watch a war movie podcast.
What's in it for me, they say.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what's in it for you. What's in it for you is a biting socio-political commentary, scattered dick and fart Wait jokes.
And a lot of history. Like, there's the depicted wars, but also the history of the time period that these films were made and released.
They're very telling.
So download Friendly Fire every Friday from your favorite podcatcher.
Or MaximumFun.org.
Fairhaven's a city in a bubble. An actual bubble. It keeps the monsters out. Most of them, anyway.
I never liked the look of movies on Blu-ray. For my money, Betamax is the superior format.
I'm thinking of deleting Facebook and going back to MySpace.
As far as beverages go, I'm just kind of over water.
Though I guess at any given party, you're gonna meet some dudes like that, even if you're not in the middle of a nightmarish wasteland. Bubble, the sci-fi comedy from MaximumFun.org. Just open your podcast app and search for Bubble.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
Flipping it and reversing it in this special big sell. We are actually not going to rate the previous week's big sell. That's what we normally do. Amit and I take turns recommending pop culture to the other. This week, we're just going to talk about some of our favorite LGBTQIA pop culture. What I'm trying to do, Amita, is kind of recommend stuff that people may not have seen, heard, experienced, or haven't for a while and might enjoy being reminded of it. So, yeah, I'm excited to talk about some stuff. Big yes. Selling it all.
I love it. I want to hear all of your under the radar big sells. As I may not have as many under the radar ones, but I will be able to suggest things, hopefully, that people haven't experienced yet.
All right, sure. Well, my first one is an album that came out in 1984. I was a baby and adolescent, and I would but I love this album right away. It's called The Age of Consent, and the group is Bronski Beat, and it was the first musical group that I listened to who were openly gay. Yes. Did I listen to Culture Club? I did. Did I listen to, you know, I listened, I'm not going to go on. I don't want to start outing people, but who I didn't really come out. But yeah, listen, I listened to Prince, of course. I listened to Culture Club. Like, there was a lot of like androgyny going on in the 80s. But Bronski Beat, to my memory, was the first musicians who sang about being gay.
Huh.
Right. So I should say openly gay, and their songs were about being gay. So they have a song called Small Town Boy, which is sung in the third person, but it's about a boy who grows up in a small town, who's gay, who gets bullied, who has to flee, and I think he goes to London and to kind of live a life. And the song kind of ends triumphantly with a big question mark, but at least he escaped that small town and is making his life in London. So yeah, kind of very specific songs about being gay, and which, you know, it was 84. It was a little revolutionary. You know, like even like someone like David Bowie was like, said he was gay, but then took it back. You know, Boy George was coy and said he was bisexual. So Bronski Beat definitely deserves to be remembered and listened to, because they were without hesitation owning their sexuality and singing about it and making pretty good pop music.
All right. I love
that
suggestion.
I'll put a link in the show notes. Yeah.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
I'd love to get some Bronski Beat in my life.
Yeah. It's good dance music. You'll dance around in your living room to it, I predict.
Oh, yeah.
So what about you, Amita? Any pop culture that you'd like to suggest?
Yeah, I have a couple things. The first one that I will suggest is a YouTube video of someone you may have heard of. Her name is Sara Ramirez. She is the actress that played Cali Torres on Grey's Anatomy for many years, and was one of the longest running bisexual characters on television. I think it still might be in history as one of the longest running like central bisexual characters on television. Thank you, Shonda Rhimes, for that. And she never actually personally, as Sara Ramirez, actually came out while she was on the show. She came out just, I think, within the last year as bisexual. And she won this award, and this YouTube video is her speech when she won this award as a trailblazer at this event for the Center, which is the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Community Center. And I came across it. I think it was on her Instagram page. It was a beautiful and informative speech about a little of the stigma of being bisexual and the discussion of how, you know, certain people don't really understand bisexuality and they immediately stereotype it, and her struggles with it and her trying to really fight that stereotype and educate. And I really enjoyed her conviction in this speech, and I really learned a lot also.
All right, you know I've got to say this, Amita. So,
okay.
2 weeks ago, at the Brooklyn Museum, I had the honor of having my show, My House, screened at the Brooklyn Museum, and Sara Ramirez was in the house. She was in the audience. She's friends with one of the producers on the show, and she showed up, and we chatted. You and I chatted with her afterwards. And
don't remind me. Oh my God.
I know. And I'll say this. It's like, on one hand, you are saying to yourself, oh, I'm talking to Cali Torres, this character who I felt such emotion for, and I wept and I laughed. But then, like, for me, like, that lasted for just like a few seconds. And then I was like, oh, I'm talking to Sara Ramirez, who seems so cool, so smart and articulate, and good eye contact. She maintained eye contact. Because, you know, like some celebrities who I've hung out with, like they're constantly, like their eyes are darting around the room. Oh, should I be speaking to someone else? Where am I? You know, she was like, she was in it. She was, she just felt very sincere to me, very passionate. And we should invite her to come on our podcast sometime.
Yes, please. Yes.
Yeah. So,
Sarah, so you have an open thrill. Invitation, Sarah.
But yeah, so I definitely want to check that out. Thank you. And it was such a pleasure to meet her. Awesome.
Thank you for introducing her to me. Mm-hmm. We had a really good time. I only spoke to her for a few minutes, but we had a great time gushing about you and her friend being in the audience, supporting our friends, doing something great and being able to kind of, you know, see you guys shine. So I felt like me and Sarah had bonded because we were friends supporting friends.
I love everything you're saying. Okay.
Yes. So that's it. So yeah, that's my suggestion. We will obviously put a link to this YouTube video in our show notes so everyone can enjoy this.
For sure. Well, I have one more. It's a French film called Time to Leave. And I saw this when it came out back in 2005. And it's by this French director that I love, love, love. His name is François Ozon. He directed, I think maybe his most famous movie is Summer Hours, which I think did pretty well over here with Juliette Binoche and some other people. But but Time to Leave is about like a 30, 35-year-old gay man who is diagnosed, and this is a thing, and not with HIV, but he's diagnosed with a terminal illness. And he has a tumor that's metastasized, and he has 3 months to live. And it's what he decides to do with those 3 months. It sounds like it might be kind of hyper-dramatic, or melodramatic, but it's not. It's like a very tender, thoughtful. He's not always likable during those 3 months, but I love this movie because it's just so well done, but it's also one of the first films about a main gay character, but the story wasn't about him being gay, right? Like, he just happened to be gay. He was this kind of flawed character who gets this devastating news, and he has to figure out what he's going to do about it. And he happens to be gay. And it's just so well done. And I will do the research and see if it's streaming anywhere. If it is, I'm going to rewatch it because I haven't seen it in 10 years. But really powerful, really well done. Time to Leave.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that if you find it somewhere. Like, definitely. Obviously, you're going to put it in the show notes if you do. But definitely just like send me that link too, because I would love to check that out.
Should I slide it into your DM?
No, gosh. Oh. Why do you always go there?
I don't know. I just... Why does it have to be like that?
Because that's what culture has told us it is, okay? It's in the culture. You know, that's a good question. You know, why does it have to be? Why does slide into your DMs have to be like that? It's an interesting question to pose and to ask, which leads me into interesting questions to pose, which is my last suggestion. Ooh. for queer pop culture.
Nice segue. I think.
Yeah, no. Maybe. No, it's a great, it's awesome. And I think I've definitely waited at least 10 minutes before talking about Queer Eye again, and I'm going to talk about it again right now. So one of the stars of Queer Eye, Jonathan Van Ness, those of you who know Queer Eye know, but he has got this amazing big personality, and it exudes kind of like joy and excitement and sass. And he was also on Gay of Thrones, which you have actually suggested to me, a few years ago. Which is a fantastic web series where Jonathan does somebody's hair, but then also does a recap of Game of Thrones while doing their hair. And usually it's so good. And the person who's doing their hair is usually a celebrity. So that is where Jonathan's claim to fame began. And then he's now this big, huge international star with Queer Eye. Jonathan also has a podcast. And I'm not sure if you knew about this, Sean, but this is a sell for all of you. And I think what's intriguing about Jonathan, you know, he's the grooming expert on Queer Eye. You know, he did hair on the Game of Thrones thing. Like, you could think that potentially he is a superficial person by, you know, being all about hair and looks and things. But what I love about him is his curiosity, which is why this podcast, Getting Curious with Jonathan Van Ness is the title, is great. It shows this other side of him and is really educational, but in his way, in his brand. So titles of certain podcasts on this, on his site. Is Saudi Arabia cute now? But you're like, oh, okay, he's being cutesy and whatever. But he really does his homework. He has a professor as his guest, and it's the professor of Middle Eastern history at UCLA. And, you know, the literally in the show notes, it says, you know, this professor returns with an update on the Middle East, Syria, Yemen, and is Saudi Arabia liberalizing? Like, he goes there, he asks really interesting questions, he has really interesting controversial topics, and I think he tries in his own way to really dive deep and educate, but also have humor and entertainment within it. You know, I mean, even just the titles of these, who was the Beyonce of Renaissance art with Professor Lisa Bouton Vitella? You know, and then there's episodes that are really just fun, you know, like who gave you permission to be so cute with his Queer Eye co-star, Karamo. You know, how can we be less rude to bees with another professor? I think it's a great way to get an education if you love his personality and you're also curious, you know, like he is. So I highly recommend this podcast.
That's awesome. I mean, listen, I want to see if Jon and Daenerys hook up. I want to see if, you know, Cersei gets killed by Arya. But why I really want Game of Thrones to come back is for more Game of Thrones recaps. I hope he still does them. I hope he's not too big for that by the time Game of Thrones returns.
I hope he does too, because all I need him to do is say, "Where are my dragons?"
Dragons. Are we ready, Amita Patel? Because we don't use this term lightly, and I feel like people should stand the test of time. So, but I'm just throwing this out there. Would you consider at some point in the near future dubbing him a national treasure, Jonathan Van Ness?
I think, yes, he's a contender.
All right.
He's a contender.
Okay, you heard it here first.
He totally is. I mean, I fell in love with him on Game of Thrones, and then even further in love with him on Queer Eye, and then at that Vulture Festival talk, I got to briefly meet him afterwards and give him a hug and just say thank you for being you. And that was enough. And I was like, yes, let's be best friends. Jonathan, let's be best friends, please. You have a lot right now. I'm sure you're overwhelmed. You and Justin Theroux are frolicking in a, you know, field right now. Enjoy.
Ooh, they'd make pretty babies. Okay. Mm. Well, we hope you enjoyed our gay pop culture big sell. We will be back with a heterosexual big sell next week. And because this was all gay, I'm going to look for a really heterosexual big sell next week just to balance things out for representation.
Listen, don't feel like you need to be confined to just heterosexual pop culture next week. It is Pride Month, sir, not just Pride Week.
That is true. But that is all we have for this week.
Yes, it is.
We are wrapping it up. But please stay in touch with us. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're at Pop Insiders. And we'd love to hear what you think about Queer Eye. And we would love to hear if you have any pop culture big sells for us. We always love to experience new pop culture, as you may have guessed by listening to our podcast. So please let us know if you have any suggestions for us at Pop Insiders.
Yeah, and also head over to Facebook, Inside Pop Podcast, and give us a like, send, you know, leave some comments there. Go to InsidePopPodcast.com, check out older episodes, subscribe to the podcast, and you can find us everywhere you find great podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you find a podcast, you can find us. If you don't find us where you find podcasts, let us know, and we'll send you a special episode. And also, please remember to go to MaximumFun.org and also check out the other podcasts on that great network that we're a part of.
Next week, huge, huge episode. Yes, we had a chance to see Queer Eye before it was released. We have also seen the second season of Luke Cage. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to talk about it. He's back.
Okay.
Moving forward, always, Luke Cage, Cheo Hadari Coker, the amazing showrunner, has brought Luke Cage back for a second season. We're going to give you our review, our reaction. We'll get some inside info to share with you about this amazing Netflix series.
Have a great week, y'all. Bye. Forward always.
Sweet Christmas.
That's the one I forgot. I was like, Jesus Christmas? No, that's not it.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.